Welcome to Chapter 3 of The Distance Between Stars, a sci-fi novelette and audio drama by Stephen Cavett. Stick around after the show for fun facts and a look at what's next. Enjoy the show.
I became a journalism major one Friday night in September, my freshman year. My dad called while I was walking out the door to another party full of boys who probably couldn't pronounce my name. "You're going to love this, Peanut," he said. And then he read me a paper about the Pleiades. He read the whole thing over the phone. He got so excited, his stutter broke free, and he had to slow down and start again. My friend Anya kept texting me. "The cute guy from chemistry is here. The baseball player. Are you coming?" I thought about the nights my father made the sky come alive in an overgrown field. I kicked off my heels and set my purse down by the bed. Two astronomers had tracked myths about the star cluster across continents. From Greece to Australia, they found the same story. Virgins chased by men until they escaped into the sky. The Greeks called them the Seven Sisters. Aboriginal tribes named them the Napaljari, the Nyarlathotep, the Eucharilia, the Maya Mai. Only six stars are visible to the naked eye from the Earth. But the stories often mention a seventh girl in hiding, a cloak pulled across her face. The astronomers tracked where the stars were 100,000 years ago, when humans were all sitting around fires in Africa. "You could see all seven then," they said. People carried the story across thousands of miles of ocean. Stars drifted. Names changed, but the story remained. It's the oldest story in the world. Imagine that. On Monday, I printed the article out at the library and taped it above my dorm room desk. All year, I'd look up from my homework and think, "I want to tell stories that last." When the first wave hit, I was embedded with migrant workers on Produce Row in Nogales, tracking the survival of curanderas, neighborhood women who treated patients with herbal medicine, shamanism, and prayers. I had 2 years of high school Spanish, a MacBook, two field mics, and an intern named Brian, who is earning undergrad credit, as my producer. We were a month away from finishing my thesis when the rumors started coming over the wall. I work in water reclamation now when I'm not recording. There's always something to do. Motors to clean, filters to replace, pipes to tighten. After my shift, I stand at the fifth level starboard port in my overalls and stare at the galaxy. Space travel isn't like the movies. Stars don't blur or streak. They hang suspended like silver flakes in tequila. No matter how long I wait, the ship looks like it's standing still. Parallax, it's called. The stars are so far away that we can't see the changes. At least, not yet.
I swam in the Gulf of Thailand a few years before the Un set it on fire. Tara had a photo shoot on an island off the coast of Cambodia. Koh Rong. One fishing village, a few bungalow resorts, just jungle and red dirt and the sea rolling in all night. The little shh, shh, against the sand. Tara had the last night off, and we walked out waist deep in the waves. I swam until my lungs burned. The moon was full, and the bioluminescent plankton glowed white-blue around our legs. We held hands, and salt water dripped off our fingers, and a few bright plankton stayed on our skin. Tara traced her nails across my glowing palm. "You're my star catcher," she said. "They should be taking pictures of you." They'd let her wear this red two-piece home from the shoot with a coral shell clasp on her hip. The strap fell off one shoulder, and she shone in the moonlight. People say she was perfect, but her chin was too long. She hated it. I couldn't get her to eat when she was nervous, and she was nervous all the time. Traffic, wildfires, internet comments. She got so thin you could see her ribs. I wanted to tie her down and feed her spaghetti, but she'd get mad if you bugged her about it. She'd sneak her vape pen out on the porch while I was writing, tap her foot a mile a minute. People say she was all filters and makeup, too. She was nothing special. They never saw her laugh, not in person. That night, she giggled like a kid every time the plankton flashed. She'd made her first million by then, bought a condo in South Beach, but you could still surprise her. I came up middle class in Georgia. I had a few things published, but I grew up on four-wheelers, you know? Baptist churches and gospel, Waffle House on Saturday mornings. There was nothing like Tara for miles. Still isn't. There won't be again. Hit the bugs so hard they can't chase us off planet. That was the plan. Everybody knew it. The cities were gone, but there were 60 million people in the sticks when we pushed the button. When I pushed the button. Like those plankton that stuck on our bodies and dried out, dying one way or another. I don't watch the vids anymore. I can't write. Where my feelings are supposed to be, it's all so quiet.
I sleep in the men's dorm on the top bunk, my face 6 inches from the gray tile. I go to lunch and come back alone. I look out the window at all these stars. I just see the Gulf of Thailand. The wooden long-tail boats drifting at anchor. All those plankton finding each other in the dark.
I guess it helped living in flyover country. Even the aliens didn't want Arkansas until the third wave. Trucks kept running until the orbitals tore up the interstates. Meat and milk and toilet paper were gone. But we had canned goods and pasta. Local farms hauled produce in and fresh eggs. I still bike to work every day to front and face the shelves and dust those growing gaps between the merchandise. The thing about war is, until you hear the gunshots, you tell yourself it'll pass, like summer thunder. Country was just too big to take it personally. Most of us have grown up with grandmothers who canned green beans out of the backyard, so we went back to our roots. Gardens instead of grass. Neighbors trading seeds over the fence. Kids fishing anything deeper than a puddle. We had a couple cold winters. Some old people froze to death. But it was almost idyllic. The way things used to be. Fathers standing around fires telling stories. Then the Nashers blew up the radio tower at the college. Dead horses blossom in the fields like red carnations, skin hanging in threads from the gnawed bones. All of a sudden, everybody was Baptist, even the meth heads. The National Guard rolled in, soldiers from the 39th Infantry, Lakota surveillance helicopters, the 142nd Field Artillery back from the Missouri. Schools and ball fields and shopping malls turned into barracks. I know the unit names because we ended up with a lot of their gear. When the Nashers were done with them, you could pick up rifles up off the ground like mushrooms in a cow field after a rain. Always there. Always ready. That was the guard slogan. They fought like hell, but nobody was ready for the I wasn't always a Safeway manager. I used to count wildlife for the Forest Service. I tracked deer, elk, buffalo, wolves in a couple mountain ranges, cleared trails and cleaned campgrounds, the kind of seasonal jobs you could get with a pair of boots and half a biology degree. I spent more nights in the back of a green F-150, the tarp over me in the rain, than I spent in bed. One whole year, I shot wild hogs in the Smokies for the national park. Trapped them in cages. Put a .357 through the bars and a bullet into those thick, greasy skulls. Bloody work. But it saved the forest for the bears. Feral boars used to wallow and root and silt up the streams. They were hell on a mountain range. I'd smoke strips of bacon, wild and good, and leave the rest for the coyotes. I didn't know then I was practicing for the end of the world. I was just lonely, and I liked being outside. But I learned what happens when you turn an animal loose with no natural balances. Burmese pythons in the Everglades wiped out 80% of the rabbits in a couple decades. We aren't the pythons in the story, you understand? I knew we'd lost the country. I just wanted to make the Oon pay. The Guard was pushing the invaders west toward Oklahoma when they got wiped out. The Air Force was going to drop a Moab bomb, the biggest one we had. The kind we used on ISIS caves in Afghanistan. A survivor told me they cleared a chunk of the Choctaw Reservation to trap and crater the ripples. The military had actual strategic objectives, satellite comms, artillery. They knew how to fight a war. Look where it got them. I wasn't planning on winning. I just set out to kill as many needle mouths as I could find. Anybody who wanted could come with me. The grocery store was our base. Once we got the militia off the ground, hunters, cops, vets with beer bellies, whoever was left over from the Guard, bunch of talkers, but a few shooters, too. The guys started calling me captain as a joke, and it stuck. We knew from the Guard that the Nashers could see heat signatures. Big groups were a death trap. Anyway, the Oon weren't an army. They were an invasive species, and I knew about those. Hunting the Oon was no different than hunting a wild animal. They never expect you to crawl out of a horse carcass covered in flies and start shooting, or lie all night in a wet drainage ditch with your rifle trained on the road and mud on your face and arms to hide the body heat. Go where nobody in his right mind would go and squeeze the trigger. If you don't get killed, get some sleep and do it again. It's the simplest arithmetic there is. And you get your steps in for the day. We kept the Oon busy hunting us so people could run or go to ground. A lot of them took their chances on the roads with what was left of the gas. Most of them burned alive when the skimmers came. The lucky ones made it through. The others stayed and fortified the high school gym and a couple hotels with barbed wire and spotlights and machine guns the Guard left behind. I guess being behind walls made them feel safe. I always liked it better where it was quiet. I wanted to die in the moonlight. But I kept waking up alive. When the rifle bucked and the shimmers faltered, I could see the Oon kicking in the weeds like the hogs all those years before. It didn't feel any different, no better, and no worse. They weren't supposed to be there. They were tearing up the land. So we went to work.
I didn't know how to talk about this stuff before. You can't think about it and get work done. We've got 23,772 people in tin cans in a vacuum. And the crews welded the seams shut while Marines were shooting aliens outside. But the kids should know what it was like, right? They should know what we lost. Before China went offline, a woman transmitted from an army outpost in the southern mountains above Kunming. All channels, a recurring loop. Her voice broke, and then she said it again, and again. Next to me, Bao Li dropped his pencil. His face went white, and he balled his fists. He said,
This is a quote from Mao Zedong. She is saying, death happens to everyone, but we care about the people, the many suffering. When we die for the people, this is a good death. The radio squawked, and the room went still, and the phone started ringing, and everybody hugged Bao until he pushed us off. He walked out in the rain, walked to the edge of the barbed wire, and screamed himself hoarse. Screamed like a cat in an alley or a mangled deer. The loop kept playing, rising and falling in the four tones of Mandarin. But now we knew what it said. Asia was gone. Everyone Bao loved was dead.
I can't believe you're making me do this. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. I looked over Jordan and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. A band of angels coming after me, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. If you get there before I do, coming for to carry me home. Tell all my friends I'm coming too, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
Some startup in Australia figured out the laser guns. They're just mining rigs with a booster on the back to cut down on recoil. But without the stabilizers, we jumped backwards in the vacuum of space every time we fired. We needed the lasers to get past the Oond orbitals. Maybe asteroid fields, if we hit any. And after the Earth Wars, it just feels good to be able to punch a hole in anything we find. I was on the bridge when we splashed the first orbital. I was too green to help, but I wasn't going to sit in Gen Pop with crying babies while we ran an alien blockade. If I was going to die, I wanted to see it coming. The Air Force guards at the nose of the ship put SIGs in my face, but I waved my pilot's badge and told them they could let me through or shoot me and fly it themselves. I've been yelled at by the brass enough to pull it off. The Chesterfield has jump seats on the bridge for the backup crew, plus any admins who want to drop in to feel important. I nodded to the flight crew and buckled in, kept my mouth shut, waited for the G's to kick in. By now, my nephews had either made it to the Paul Revere or not. One last takeoff. My mother used to sing this song in the morning while she packed our lunches. She was the only one of us who went to church. This is the day, this is the day that the Lord hath made, that the Lord hath made. I will rejoice and be glad in it, and be glad in it. We broke atmosphere, and that big mother reared up in front of us like an alien moon. Knobby and guttural. A world ship. They jumped galaxies in it. Brought supplies, ground troops, maybe even colonists waiting to fill the cities they'd burned. The first hit flared up like a struck match. Those beaters had enough oxygen or nitrogen or something on board to make an actual flame. The ship splintered and debris arced in all directions. We took some of it on our nose shield, and the thing held. Pilots kept us pointed towards the threat until the pieces stopped flying. Radio calls crackled in from the fleet. Muted yells. The other three orbitals plunged in bits and pieces into the ocean of a dying world. This is the day. One of the pilots unbuckled his harness and shook my hand. He said, "Welcome to the rodeo. Try not to get bucked off." He turned back to the controls. The ship rolled leeward like some silver whale and dove into the black.
Thanks for listening to Chapter 3 of The Distance Between Stars, a sci-fi novelette and audio drama by me, Stephen Cabot. Today's episode featured Kaylee Weintraub as intrepid journalist Nikish Fromer, Stephen Cabot as lovelorn writer Johnny Quarles, Colin Johnson as militia captain Leland Hames, Dr. Joel Ying as lead scientist Denton Boyce, Lori Cornelius as adoptive mom and literature professor Leslie Rhodes, Dr. Joe Flowers as accidental pilot Alan Abernathy, and our amazing sound editor, John Cornelius. I always thought of this project as a space opera. Technically, a space opera is a swashbuckling sci-fi story set across different parts of the galaxy with adventure and probably melodrama. It's like a soap opera with laser guns. But mine has singing. In this episode, you heard Lori Cornelius perform Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and Joe Flowers do a bit of This is the Day That the Lord Hath Made. I grew up with both of those songs in the church. My mom actually used to sing us This is the Day around the house to get us going in the morning. I love sharing both of those with you, and I'll sing one of my own songs that I've written in Chapter 5, which was both scary and awesome to put out in the world on a podcast. We've got two episodes left of The Distance Between Stars. On the Stephen Cabot Presents podcast, you get the whole book for free. I'm not going to hide the last chapter behind a paywall. I'm not going to stop you from buying a copy either. It's available now on Kindle Unlimited and in print at major booksellers. And we've got a link in the episode description. Join the mailing list at stephencabot.com for a heads up about the next book, The Uncertainty Principle, as jump tech Snap Arbuckle Jr. tries to save the only girl he almost loved from a space-time anomaly and the vicious aliens known as the Und.